Freedomradio.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon, 12:15 here at News Radio 560 KPQ. Time for the show called The Agenda. Can't believe it's only 31 degrees out there. But the sheriff just came in and he looks like it's 31 degrees outside, so we're going to go with that. And I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening today, to consider this. State of Washington has now in place more than 7.3 million people, and they're all living here. And although we can always hope that they will each and every one of them behave themselves, who in the world can watch over 7.3 million potential criminals every day? And the answer is no one. That's the answer you have to come up with. Even on your own, you would have come up with that one, right? No one can prevent crime by simply trying to watch everyone. If you're a peace officer, how many potential criminals can your law enforcement day cover? I mean, you plan to watch potential criminals 7 through 42, then you get a call on the radio for service, and you have to drive across town and deal with potential criminals 65 through 72 as they stand in an intersection holding onto each other's shirt fronts and make all those thinly veiled threats that people do in intersections. And it would be hilarious if it wasn't a crime, but given the time and place, it's not so funny. Potentials are everywhere. Deputies and other authorities are spread rather thin, so who has the advantage? The crime masterminds? Or the men and women in blue or green or brown or black or whatever color their uniform is. Those looking for a job should know that there are always vacancies listed under crime, giving you the wrong impression. Hey, there's probably an employment sector here ready for a new market share. Is there room for me in the exciting new employment opportunity called crime? Can I get into middle management if I have not committed a crime heretofore? Is there a period of training? Do I have to tell you the truth during the job interview? Do they expect me to lie? Is there a 401k? Is there a dress code for crime? Do they have casual Fridays? Do they have paid holidays? Those are some of my pet restrictions. Can I have a doggie or a kitty, although I steal body parts for commercial resale? Oh, yeah. I've never had the dubious respect that criminals have for traditionally shared amongst themselves while talking loudly in after-hour establishments. Crime sounds great from the outside looking in. But crime in our state, as characterized by the Chelan County Sheriff Brian Burnett, is something that we want to discuss now. And we ask him because he's the newly appointed man to a new distinctive position. Sheriff, welcome to KPQ. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Michael.
Is crime a good job?
Is crime a good job? Well,
Does anybody make any money?
I was disappointed you said that there was 7.3 million criminals in Washington State.
Potential.
Potential. Maybe I missed the potential part. I'm hoping our numbers are
slightly lower than that.
Yeah, I might be wanting to get into a different profession.
Well, the reason I turn to you for these authoritative discussions is because you're now a member of the Criminal Justice Training Commission. That sounds pretty official. Plus, congratulations, you were appointed by the governor to this position.
Right. Yeah, it is something that I actually applied for. I knew that was coming up. Sheriff John Turner was not running for re-election from Walla Walla County. He had been on that for several years. There's a couple sheriffs at large on that. There's also chief of police, those positions at large. The attorney general sits on that. We have citizens at large. There's also someone that represents the prosecutor's office, I think, out of King County. Several other positions there throughout Washington State Patrol Chief.
Well, it's a distinctive commission, but it's an important one too.
It is. And as my time was winding down as being on the executive board for the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, I felt like that would be a pretty good one to throw my my name in the hat there for consideration. And I went over and visited with the Criminal Justice Training Commission director, Sue Rahr, who's also a retired King County Sheriff, and just spoke directly with her to what all that would entail, what would be my time commitment and different things like that. And then after speaking to several different people, I actually thought it would be a good thing for our agency and bring some good balance to the commission. And it'd be a great thing for us. And the reason being is that I think we have a great training program. We're really connected with the Criminal Justice Training Commission. Very forward, progressive in our training, use of force and different things like that. Trying to reduce liability, keep our officers safe. A lot of different reasons we do what we do. And I just thought that connection would be great. Again, you're appointed by the governor and your duties for that position as a commissioner are to the commission itself. It's not, for your agency, but there's some cross-contamination there that will go well. And I know that there'll be some things that I'll be able to learn and also contribute, because I believe that, again, our staff is doing a great thing here, and I look to them for advisement on some things as well.
Your previous work with the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Deputy and Police Chiefs, for that matter, gave you an insight into what the work would be like and why you would be good for the job?
Well, the connection with who to talk to for that. I also talked to Steve Strand, who's the executive director for the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, was also a retired police chief and a short-time elected chair for King County as well. A person that I look up to and respect. And so I talked with him. And again, we want to make sure that we have good people on these commissions to hear out. There's a lot of rule changes that come our way. And so, you know, that board will actually vote on those and have input. A couple other things that they do is they'll get petitions for waivers you'll end up with people that have their certification through as a commissioned officer in the state of Washington. And one, they've either left law enforcement as their employment and they're coming back after a certain amount of time. And I think the expiration time on certification is at 60 months. Or maybe they were working in the federal side of it, or they've got federal training and they're asking the commission to waive that so they can come in and they don't have to go back to the entry level, which is that full academy of, you know, 19-20 weeks, for the training. And then they can just go straight in and ask the petition just to go to the short-term academy. That's just the challenges that, and it's just a 2-week training.
Is this a way to get all the agencies within the state to train the same way and to understand the same pressures and to react the same way and under pressure?
Well, right. We're one of the few states in the nation that uses this type of training, a commission. Some of them are using a post. And so those are slightly different. But again, we want to keep our training standardized for all of our officers. And again, this is basic law enforcement. If that's all you're going to do is train your officers in the basic piece of that and you don't go on and do much more on a regular basis, your officers aren't going to have the tools and the training to help them be successful in the future. And again, to reduce liability, it's a huge thing. Washington State does require, 24, documented hours of additional annual training per officer per year. So that's something that we have to stay up on, and we do in-service training at the Chelan County Sheriff's Office. We do bi-monthly training, and bi-monthly means is approximately every other month we're going to set aside a 3 to 4 hour block that we're going to be working on specific training for all of our commission staff. Even my administration will go through that. And something that we're working on and talking to the other agencies here locally is to start combining our resources and do a regional training so we can combine our instructors, our training facilities, reduce costs for the training expense side of that moving forward. So, again, those are conversations we're having with the local law enforcement leaders now.
And do your deputies and other people who are taking this training find themselves during that training doing things that maybe they have never actually done in reality on the street?
Well, I mean, when you try to do reality-based training, it's to say it allows you an option and an avenue to make mistakes in the training module.
Right.
And it puts you in a mindset to the what if. Okay, I've experienced some of these dynamics and some of these different scenarios. So now when you're out on patrol and you're working and maybe things slow down or you're going to a call, you're supposed to be actively engaging the mind into the what-if scenario. Okay, if this happens, I'm going to do this. And you bring back that training again. And every component of our training on the bi-monthly to in-service is building a platform. And you start with a strong foundation, and you build and you build and you build. There's all these key components that come back. So hopefully it's that thing, repetition, you know, that you don't have to think, because in a stressful, high-stress situation, it's proven
you can't think.
The officers go back to their training.
Yeah.
Years ago, I mean, the simple thing is how they, what did they do with their empty magazines? You know, when they're doing reloads in a shooting scenario, and what they found was they were putting empty magazines back in their pockets,
loading by accident,
right? Or not planning ahead, and what we call a tactical reload is if there's a down moment in time to say that I'm going to go and prepare, I'm going to get loaded up now, kind of reconfigure here and evaluate what my situation is, assess everything around, and be prepared because we know this battle is still at hand and you're facing this threat. So just a lot of different things like that. And again, that comes from our trainers that are going over and working with the Criminal Justice Training Commission staff to stay up in their training standards and the different, specialty item, whatever that may be in that. We have recertification standards that some of our Master DT, which is defensive tactics instructors, have to do on an annual basis. And that's a week-long class every year. And again, that's to stay up to speed what is going on, but also to make sure they're proficient because they are the ones that are coming back to train everyone else in our agencies.
It's funny, but it's not funny. It's just interesting. I don't know if you think this is a good analogy, but there was a lot of football on this weekend. And one of the commentators said, if you could see this team practice, you would understand why they are so good. They are a precision practice team. They go through all the different ways that this play can come about, all the different ways it can be broken up by the defense. They allow for it. They practice it. They make mistakes, and they do it again. Most people don't train in their jobs. When you think about it, you have that 1 week of training when you get the new job, and mostly that's where's the bathroom, where's the lunchroom, where's my computer. But it's not an extensive training period. You sort of have to learn on the job, which is not good for either a football player or a peace officer.
Right. You know, obviously, and I did. I was watching that game that you're referring to, actually, and I thought that was a great analogy. Again, we don't have the luxury to train for 6 days
but
and work one.
Yeah.
I mean, if we did, yeah. I mean, but again, and that's one of the things we do, in real life scenarios. We do a talk back. We do a brief back. So in every, whether it's a SWAT operation or a search and rescue or just a high-risk search warrant or domestic violence call, and where you're working with multiple people on the call, it's really good to get together with those individuals and talk afterwards and say, hey, what worked well here? Obviously making sure you didn't, we didn't go outside of policy, but what worked well here and what are some things that we saw that kind of caught us off guard or we tried and it didn't work well. And if there were things that didn't work well, what were the, why? And identifying what those things are and so we can change those things in the future and just, make our response, make every person out there better as they go forward.
I'm just taking a wild guess, but I would think that most of the deputies under your command have not fired their weapon in anger or in self-defense, have not made dangerous arrests when they're outnumbered, have not gotten into some of the terrible conditions that you can enter in as a deputy with no warning, less than 30 seconds to react. And I just wonder, am I right about that, that most people are training for stuff that they fortunately have not had to do in real life?
I think it's fair to say, we train for those events that we hope we never have to, utilize the training for. Train hard, train well, and hope to God and pray that you never have to use those resources that you're doing. But at the same time, we're training as if we are going to.
What did you learn during your time with the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs that has made you a good candidate? In fact, the man who got the job for the Criminal Justice Training Commission. What did you learn with all your compadres across the state that you've been able to marshal now into this second offering?
Well, more than anything, it's networking and finding people that are, I call the subject matter experts that you're not. And going out there and not having to recreate the wheel and being able to talk to those people that are already doing this, what you're researching and find out again what worked well in your program here, what didn't work well. Obviously you've got, labor law, you've got, collective bargaining and you've got policy and procedure and you've got operations and all of these different types of things, hiring, recruitment. And so there's just all these different things, and it gives you a wealth of information. And maybe you don't know that person right away, but I know people that do know, and I can put that message out there. There's a lot of times that the sheriffs or chiefs will just put that message out, and it'll go out to the entire group. They'll email it out and say, hey, Sheriff so-and-so is looking for information on this. Could you respond directly to them if you have information to share with that person? And again, so it's just a network sharing. Again, WASPIC itself is working on best policy. So we have a policy director, James McMahon, who is basically our lobbyist for legislature and going in front of them and what we do believe we're going to support and or go against when we see coming down off Olympia.
Off Olympia, yeah.
Off of Olympia.
It's like Mount
it's on
Olympia.
The hill, so I'll say off of Olympia.
Yeah, it's like they the gods of Olympia, they just send down a thunderbolt periodically.
Right.
When you were appointed to this new position, how did you get the call? Does the governor call you? Does he send a letter? Do you have a designated time to meet up, or how does that work?
Well, a couple different things happened. I actually got a call from the Hokium Chief of Police, Jeff Myers, who's the chair for the commission. And of course, I see Jeff around. I've seen him and known him for a lot of years. He's been around Waspik. Matter of fact, it goes as far back as when I was a corporal for Chelan County Sheriff's Office working patrol, and our agency was going through the accreditation standard program. And Jeff, at the time, he was not a chief of police back then, but he actually rode with me as one of their evaluators. And so he'll always bring that up. And Jeff's like 6'7", 6'8". So he's a big man. He's not a guy that you forget. But anyway, I got a phone call from Jeff, and he said, "Hey, congratulations." And then, and it was kind of premature because I hadn't officially heard from the governor's office. But he said, "Hey, I know that the decision's been made. You should be hearing something from the governor's staff soon." And it was like the next day that I got a call from someone on the, Governor Inslee's staff, and just said, "Hey, we're in the process. You've been approved and been selected, making sure that that's still in your interest and you want to move forward." And I said, "Absolutely. Okay, we'll be sending stuff in the mail." And a day or two later, I got stuff in the mail that had to be certified because it's an appointment, from the governor himself. And that next thing I knew, I was getting the emails from, Sue Rahr, the executive director at the Criminal Justice Training Commission, with the quarterly meetings. They meet four times a year, unless there's something special that comes up. And so I have those out in advance, when I know that I have to plan on traveling over to Burien. Those meetings are generally done on site. I think we're going to do one extra meeting, through the Waspik conference. So that'll be in Spokane in the spring, but it's something that I'll already be at.
When's the first meeting? What are you going to talk about?
They'll be going over rule changes and a couple different other things. Actually, the first meeting that I was going to be part of was in December. We had pretty big snowstorms going on, and I just said, you know, it's not worth it. So I did a call in and actually participated over the phone on that one from my office.
He's the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. We'll be back to talk with the sheriff more after these words. If you have a question for the sheriff, my phone number is right now very quiet. You can make it ring 509-663-5656. 509-663-5656.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
The Orthodox Church is the original Christian church of history with 2,000 years of continuous Christian faith. It exists today unchanged in places like Nazareth.
On News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:35, 31 degrees outside in Wenatchee Town. My very special guest today on The Agenda is the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett, who's just been appointed to the Criminal Justice Training Commission, the CJTC, appointment by the Governor Inslee. Prior to that, he was with the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, and that's two statewide organizations that our sheriff has been represented on. We talked about the population of our state being a little over 7.3 million. But, Sheriff, there are only 15,800 law enforcement employees total for the whole state. So you're clearly outnumbered. Do you ever feel outnumbered in terms of your ability to fight crime with the level of protection that you have?
I think in law enforcement, it's one of those things is you always are looking at, boy, if I had this,
yeah,
I could go out and do that. And we should be thinking that way. I mean, we can't just, you know, but at the same time, you have to be realistic about it. And take it. And I know in leadership, they always talk about, air war versus ground war.
What's that mean?
If you look at it, I mean, war tactics.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
You know, especially in modern day is you can go out and you can put in the air power, the firepower.
As long as you want.
But you never clean up and completely handle it all without putting boots on the ground.
Right.
I mean, that is where the real work is done. And you can kind of take that and translate it back to leadership and what you have to do and say, and when I relate that to air war is like, you know, our command staff, the leadership can come in with a message and a vision and work on training and policy and procedure. But the ground war is, you know, from our chiefs that are working with our first line supervisors and all of our, you know, people that are frontline defense, our deputies on the ground, you know, that's where the work is really done. And there's two components that have to work well together to be able to make, to have a successful law enforcement agency. And so, you know, I think it's just important to say how well we work together in an agency, how well we work together here in this valley with, you know, multi-agencies, and we call them brothers and sisters. They are our local agencies, and so that's what we talked about, how we train in the future and some things we're doing. We have some shared teams here, you know, our Chelan County Regional SWAT team, but at the same time, we're sharing information, we're doing this. And so I think that's important to know. If we can put those type of resources together, we're always going to be better prepared. But at the same time, I think going forward is, I think Washington State is one of the worst per capita officers per capita ratio in the United States of America. And that's hard to understand, but I've seen some of those numbers. When we did that mass shooting group that I was participated in this last year, that was one of the stats that I saw handed down, and I was really kind of taken back by that. And even if we were supposed to get up to the average of what is around the United States, we'd have to add, I want to say it was 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 officers in Washington State.
Wow.
And so, and I think that's some pressure that came through that we wanted to put back on the governor's office to say, hey, the Criminal Justice Training Commission needs X amount of dollars to fund our basic law enforcement academy, so we can not have this big wait time in there and lag time for our new recruits and to get them off the street. And so that's a small price to pay, knowing that we are one of the lower numbers in the United States. Now, obviously, there's some things to factor in there. Other crime rates that are much higher. I'm not just saying that, hey, everybody should be even. I don't believe that necessarily either. And at the same time, taxpayer dollars have to be able to support that. But again, you know, as I look to our commissioners here on the local, we have to look to our legislators and the governor and his staff on the state level to say what is important. Let's prioritize what our tax dollars should be used for. And again, public safety infrastructure should always be number one in my mind.
I'm trying to think of states just about our size, and I'm coming up with New Mexico. I think we probably have a larger population than that. Colorado, similar population, similar size.
Well, one state that was quite a bit higher than us was Wyoming. And you think
there's
of
nobody
Wyoming,
there?
There. Well, but at the same time, their ratio per capita, you know, officers and deputies was much more than us. I want to say we were, and I don't quote me on this, I want to say it was at 1.4, 1.5 per thousand, and Wyoming was around 2.2, or the average is at 2.2. So when you look at those numbers of how many officers we have in the state of Washington, now I'm not talking that, you gave out a number, what was the number that you gave there earlier, Michael?
According to the website for the CJTC, there are 15,800 full-time law enforcement employees, 11,000 were commissioned officers.
Yeah. Okay. So 11,000, that commissioned officer is the number that I'm talking about. And the 11,000 was the number that I was familiar with.
That's not enough.
So to bring us up to where we wanted to be, it needed to just get us around 15 or 16,000, I believe. So it was quite the increase. And again, I mean, that's a big number. That's a lot of dollars.
And you're up against
state, local, and county.
You're up against those 7.3 potential criminals that we mentioned earlier. I mean, you're being outnumbered is traditional, but being outnumbered to that degree is a little. I'm surprised, quite frankly, that Washington hasn't caught up.
You know, and that's one of the things that we've talked about. When we got into some real staff challenges this last year, we had multiple people out on extended sick leave, a light duty, whether it was a job related injury. And so there was times where we had 6 or 7 employees out. And then at the same time, if we're already down by 1 or 2 attrition and we're trying to hire, so we've got a lot of backfill patrol positions specifically related to patrol to backfill to make sure that we have enough people out there to be safe for our officers, but also to handle the calls as they come in. And one of the things that we've had the luxury of is being able to send our staff to every call. So if you have a misdemeanor crime, theft, somebody comes in and rummages through your vehicle at night or takes something out of that, if you're on the west side, maybe in King County, that might be a call in and report it online yourself. They won't even send somebody out.
That's just paperwork.
Just because there's too many calls to handle that are backing up. And that's what we tell our staff. Prioritize. When it gets really busy here in the summer months, when we have all of our visitors here and our population is up and it's heat and people are drinking and they're doing crazy things, is that there's a time where, you know, you have to prioritize, and we're going to make sure that our staff is going to those calls that are, that are, you know, to protect property and persons' lives. And so, I would say the people that live here aren't necessarily used to that. And if they have some wait time that they're not used to, a little longer than they're used to, they might not think they're getting the service. But at the same time, again, we have to look at that staffing levels and what we have at the time to make sure that it's balanced out properly.
That's the Sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. We'll be back right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
Action.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
12:49 on a kind of a gray, slate gray day out there. 31 degrees is our high temperature for the day, which is just a little below freezing. And my very special guest is the Sheriff of Chelan County. Brian Burnett is here. And, Sheriff, we ask this question periodically of people. I give you a little chance to think about it. What's on your desk today, if we look at the sheriff's desk? Is it stacked high? Do you keep a clean desk?
I try to keep a clean desk. I can't work in clutter. It drives me crazy. So I try to at least have organized chaos, But that one thing that's always on my desk is the computer that has an email account that we're always trying to stay and manage that, because that can just kind of like run you into the ground if you're not careful. For me specifically, in this season coming out of closing out the 2018 budget and then working on obviously moving forward for 2019, we've got some training things going on. Like I did an hour-long webinar with some of my command staff with Lexapol, which is our online policy and procedure, and they put out best practice and training, and it was one that they did in partnership. Gordon Graham is a name that people might be familiar with. They're specific to law enforcement, and then Caliber Press. And they're really talking about officer wellness and that stress-related incidents, whether it's a use of force that it pushed people into that, and not knowing some of the physiological scientific facts that a human encounters and experiences during a traumatic event. And
we think that the police are immune to that, but they're
right.
Not. They are not.
And the other piece of that is the buildup of stress over time, and how to manage your own health with proper workout. And one big one is huge because of shift work is proper sleep. Mm. And they're saying, listen, if your people aren't getting, and you yourself aren't getting 7 hours of sleep on a regular basis,
sooner or later,
it's adding up. It's like the pressure building in the tank, and somehow there's a. It can only get built so high, and somewhere that steam's going to blow off and escape. And how does that happen? Does that happen in a traumatic event, or does it affect you physically and people get sick? And so there's a lot of different things that we're looking at bringing some wellness training here. I've been doing some research over the last couple of weeks. My undersheriff, Jason Matthews, has been working on some stuff as well. I'm looking at going to a training myself. I'm actually involved in a 12-week online leadership training through NACO, which is the National Association of County Officials, and it's an online program that we do, and we're engaging in groups and doing some things. Just completed week one of 12, and it takes me, that's about a 3 or 4 hour program, so I'm trying to balance my schedule around that and just finding some good stuff that, for personal development, you as a leader, you have to continue to do that, and it's easy to get bogged down in the trenches of the daily grind and not manage and take care of yourself.
But then you see something like the Chicago police suicide rate, which is extraordinary.
That's part of the wellness piece of that, Michael. And it's not just that, do you identify things that happen within your agency to officers during the time that they're still employed, but so many of it, they don't have those trigger events until they're gone and they've retired. And who's their network? Do they have that support group that they need to have? And so we're just trying to look out in the future. I feel like we're way behind the game.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a fact that was shared with me this week was that, you know, over the course of a 20 to 30-year law enforcement career, that could be very similar to someone who has been overseas, engaged in actual warfare for, you know, a tour or a couple tours, that actually that builds up within their body. And so we need to be thinking about that. Are we taking care of our people? And in leadership, you always know you have to take care of yourself first. If you can't manage your own health and wellness, then how do you expect to do that for those that are working with you and for you? And so
and it's not uncommon for people to leave the military and join the police force. Or
no, it's real, real common. And so
they
look
at bring their baggage.
And PTSD, people are familiar with that. But what we're finding out with post-traumatic stress disorder, and a lot of people are just wanting to call it post-traumatic stress because they're not wanting to really call it the disorder, but there is a physiological change that happens in the brain under certain events that these people are unable to manage under their own care. So we need to put things in up front to say, let's not let these happen. So that's the wellness and the management part of it. It's not dealing with it after somebody's had a massive event and they're having all of these side effects, but can we help them manage it up front so they don't have those type of things later on in the future?
Good luck with that. That's a real hard one, and it's so different from man to man and woman to woman. That's the sheriff of Chelan County looking out for the health of the men and women who work with him on News Radio 560 KPEQ. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you, Michael.